E-A-L.
Responsible eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
Hello, you're listening to Ask a Vegan. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this is my second show broadcasting from Real Worldwide Radio. And like I said last week, this is a learning process. And hopefully in a few weeks, I'll get all the electrons talking to each other whenever I want, and it'll be smooth streaming. Today is March 11th, 2012, and this is a live streaming broadcast. However, I pre-recorded this show this morning, so you won't be able to call in. But I did want to talk about calling in for the future. It just requires a little planning, just like everything, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about organization and planning during this show. But to call in, and I would really love to hear your voice, you need to go to Skype.com. That's S-K-Y-P-E.com. Some of you may be familiar with Skype. It's really a wonderful thing, and this isn't related to food. It's just related to life. But Skype.com is a great way to talk to people and now even view and talk to people all over the world. And if you're both registered on a computer, both parties, you can do it for nothing. And I've had the opportunity to talk to people all over the world this way. It's a great way to keep in touch with family and friends, especially when you're apart. And people are starting to do this on their smartphones as well. It's amazing. And we're going to do it here on the Ask a Vegan show. So if you register at Skype, just go to call Ask a Vegan, all one word, and then I will see that request and I'll accept it, and then we can talk, and that'll happen probably starting next week. But most people tend to want to comment by email, and the email, of course, is info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. And then I know some people are having some challenges downloading the show from the archives or viewing it in iTunes, and we're going to get that all patched up very soon. Meanwhile, let's get back to the show, still in process. Okay. I wanted to talk about a whole bunch of different things today. So last week I mentioned Hamantaschen, which is a favorite cookie of mine, and I make it every year around Purim. Now, Purim is a Jewish holiday. I don't observe the holiday per se because I'm not a religious person, but what I do observe is the food. I love holidays for the different foods that they bring, and this particular holiday comes with this particular cookie, which you can make all year long, but it's just kind of fun to keep with the holidays, keep with the seasons. And that makes things special. And then we enjoy them more. Okay, so one of the things that I needed to make this cookie was prune butter. And I think I might have mentioned it last week, but I ended up making the prune butter myself, which was relatively simple with organic prunes and water. That's it. And the recipe is on responsibleeatingandliving.com for prune butter. And my challenge was finding it in the stores. You know, I think about, okay, it's time to make these cookies. Do I have all the ingredients in the house? I need prune butter. And I don't normally have prune butter in the house. I don't eat a lot of jams and jellies. Normally, I prefer to eat whole fresh fruit. But I needed the prune butter. And when you go to the store, you might try this, give it a whirl. Try and find prune butter. It's not that easy to find. It's in some specialty stores. It may be in the health food stores. But certainly it's not organic. And there are some healthier varieties that aren't organic, that don't contain added sugar or any bizarre ingredients. But most of them contain a lot of sugar. And all I wanted was prunes. Okay, so I made it myself. But here's what happened. I was looking for organic prunes. It's never easy. And yeah, there were prunes and there were some organic prunes, but they were so expensive. And you know what? I ended up buying the expensive ones because I wanted to make the cookie and I figured, okay, it's once a year. It's a treat. I'll splurge. But I learned something, and that's what I want to talk about. It's called thinking ahead and planning in advance, and it can involve so many different things that we shop for. I've gotten into a habit years and years ago of ordering a number of items online that I buy in bulk so I don't have to think about them. Now, certainly we can't do that with fresh food, fresh produce. You need to buy that as fresh as possible. But there's a lot of things that we shop for that take a lot of time and we use all the time and it's inconvenient to have to keep going and getting them. Okay, so I buy toilet paper online in bulk. I like to get the 100% unbleached recycled paper kind. And that can be really pricey if you go into a store, especially at the last minute, to buy this kind of product. And so I know the brands I like, and I know the range of prices, and I can look online and get a really good deal and buy a 6-month supply of toilet paper. And, you know, certainly it depends on how much room you have in your home. I have a small 1-bedroom apartment, and I manage to keep stock of a number of essential items. But certainly if you have a garage or under the bed, there are always places to store things, I think. So I get the toilet paper. I do the same thing with laundry detergent. There are plant-based detergents that are made of very simple ingredients, phosphate-free, and with none of these artificial fragrances. You know, sometimes you walk into some of these stores and you're knocked out by the perfumes, these artificial perfumes. I don't want that in my detergent. I don't want it on my clothing. And so I buy plant-based detergents that are scented lightly with essential oils. And there are brands also that are fragrance-free if you're sensitive. And I buy them in bulk. You know, laundry detergent's heavy. And to have to go to the store, especially someone like me who doesn't have a car and I walk to all of my stores, buying this heavy stuff from time to time is, I don't like it. So I like to buy these things in bulk and keep them. And there are lots of other items that I buy in bulk, or at least buy online. I like to get a lot of recycled-based papers. So I get my wax paper, my parchment paper, which I cannot bake without. If you're not using parchment paper for your baking, you need to discover it. But I like to use recycled paper and aluminum foil as well. You can get recycled aluminum foil. These things are hard to find in the stores, and if you do find them, they're probably really expensive, but you can find them online for very reasonable prices and keep a supply so that you don't run out. This goes for, and you know, the list is not endless, but there is a list. And I'm mentioning all these items because you can plan for these things, and you know what? It will save you time. And we can talk about what you can do with some of that time in a minute. Back to this list. Dishwashing liquid. If you use dishwashing liquid, there's a variety of different options. You can buy the brand that you like, or sometimes you can just buy Dr. Bronner's or some kind of concentrated liquid and use it all around the house for any of your soap needs, hand soaps or dish soaps. But whatever you like, I like to get, again, a plant-based soap. And I buy like 12 bottles and I'm good for a very long time. Baking soda. I clean the house primarily with baking soda. The bathroom gets cleaned with baking soda, the tub and the sink. Baking soda is great. I bake with baking soda, and sometimes I brush my teeth with baking soda. It's a miracle thing. And again, sure, you could pick it up at the drugstore, and it can be relatively inexpensive, but it's something that I don't want to think about, and it's great to just always have it. And you can do the same thing with body soaps, shampoos, conditioners. Buy the kind you like, plant-based, organic, find it online, and buy a lot of them. And then you always have it. I recently discovered coconut oil, which I use for my face, for my hair, for a lot of things. And again, a few bottles of that. When you're buying a lot of different things in an online order, sometimes there are places where you can get a great price for a variety of things. Another thing, canned beans. I like to buy preferably salt-free, preferably BP canned-free, and certainly organic. And I've been finding some great prices where you buy a case, like 12 cans of beans. Most of the time I like to use dried beans that I soak and then cook. But for two reasons, I like to have canned beans on hand. They're certainly convenient and very easy when you don't have time to cook, or if you're going to be preparing something somewhere and you just need to just open a can of beans and you're good to go. The other thing is it's great for emergency preparedness to have a variety of things on hand in case you can't go out for food for, I don't know, you can't be prepared for ultimate doom, but, you know, if you can't shop for a week or 2 weeks, it's great to have these things on hand. And what I like to do is I have them, I use them from time to time, and then I replace them, so they're always there. And the same thing with salt-free canned tomatoes. I like to use tomatoes a lot in different dishes when tomatoes aren't in season. I like them to be salt-free, and I like them to be organic. And they're not easy to find. You can find them in some stores, a little bit more in places like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, but they can be more expensive. And this is a great way to always have them and get them for a reasonable price. Now, there is that issue of shipping, and a lot of companies now are including shipping in their price, especially if there's a minimum order. And I like to weigh the costs of shipping versus the cost of time and travel. And, you know, a lot of people think it's easy to just jump in the car and go pick something up. But when you add up that time, it's really significant. And myself, I don't have a car. I live in New York City. I just jump out onto the street and run to different places. And fortunately, there are a lot of stores in my neighborhood. But everything takes time. And so I really encourage you to think about what it is that you're buying that is not perishable, that you can buy in larger quantities to save on the cost and have it on hand. Now, there are other food items. We eat a lot of oatmeal. And in some ways, we can't do without oatmeal. It's just a gotta-have item. And I remember back in 3 years ago, the price of oatmeal was around, the best price I could find for organic oatmeal was $1.49 a pound. That was a really, really good price. Now it's kind of hard to get it for under $2 a pound, at least in New York City, organic rolled oats. And we went to this one health food store. We were out of oatmeal, and it wasn't usually so expensive. Maybe it was mismarked, I don't know, but it was $9 for a 2 pound bag, $4.50 a pound for organic rolled oats. That's outrageous. And then I thought, I can't do this. And I went to the internet, my friendly neighborhood internet, and I found really great prices for organic rolled oats. I ended up buying 4 2-pound bags. I put 3 pounds of oatmeal in the freezer. And you don't even have to do that. You can just put them in a cool, dry place. And now I don't have to worry about it. And the nice thing is, you can put a lot of these items on repeat orders. So you don't have to think about that either. You can always have the foods that you're using on a regular basis. I just bought a number of different flours, brown rice flour, white rice flour, and an all-purpose gluten-free flour. I bought these all online, great prices. I don't have to be gouged at the health food store. And I'm pretty happy about it. Now, one of the annoying things is when you do shop online is the packaging. And for someone like myself who doesn't like to see waste, I see these beautiful cardboard boxes that are barely used and a lot of different plastic packing material. Very, very frustrating. And I don't have an answer to that. I don't have a solution to that. I do know that a lot of these boxes are also used to ship stuff to the store. So in some ways, you're not eliminating that packaging because to move this stuff around, we do package. And until something better comes along, that's the way it is. I have some ideas in my mind about improved ways to reuse boxes for shipping, and I'm sure in the future we are going to get there because it will be more affordable. I'm not going to worry about it now. But one of the nice things, last week I was talking about these bioplastics, that plastics that are made from starch. And when I received my shipment of organic nuts the other day, I was like, oh God, at least the box was recycled. It was some reuse box that looked like it was on its last leg. But inside it was filled with those packaging peanuts. And then I felt them and I looked at them and I thought, these are starch-based. And I was able to run water on them and put them down the drain. So there are some people that are paying attention to getting some more responsible, sustainable, friendly, earth-friendly packaging. There's hope there. But in the meanwhile, I hope you think about doing some online shopping. And when you get into this routine and end up saving time, you have time to use all of those things that you've purchased, and you can get into the kitchen and you have time to prepare whole fresh meals for you and your family. It's a happy ending. Because for me, I just want to get people eating healthier food, and part of that means getting into the kitchen and making a lot of your food. I went to an event this week. It was a theater event. It was really a lovely thing where people were doing a new work in someone's home. And this wasn't a typical home. It was one of these very large loft spaces. So there was enough space for a 60-person audience and a space equivalent for a stage. It was really fun. But the great thing was they served vegan soup and vegan bread. And I don't know that the host was vegan, but I think they were just trying to appeal to a growing community and in some ways appealing to the least common denominator. So if some people don't eat red meat and some people don't eat chicken and some people don't eat dairy, well, the best thing to do is give them something vegan. And more people can eat it. Now, this particular soup they made for us, it was an Asian soup. And all I can say is ginger. It had so much ginger in it, it was outrageous. And I went home and I said, I've got to do more of that. I love fresh ginger. Wow. And so I went out and I bought a bunch of ginger. I usually have it, but for some reason I've kind of not been picking it up lately. Here's the thing about ginger. You know what it looks like? Fresh. It's all gnarly and tangled, beige color. The first thing is to remove the skin. Very simple. You take a spoon, and with the edge of the spoon, you can scrape the skin off. It comes off really easily. Now, I know some people like to take their ginger, and you can get a whole bunch of ginger and scrape all of the skin off all at once, cut it up in 1-inch pieces, and you can freeze a lot of it. And then you always have it. Or you can do a little bit at a time. But I used about 2 inches of ginger yesterday. It's like about 1 inch in diameter and 2 inches long. Took off the skin, minced it up, and added it with garlic, fresh garlic. And here's another ingredient. Shallots. Shallots are like these little onions. Have you ever used shallots? Now, I like to use onions in almost everything I'm eating. Usually it comes to dinner time and I'm not sure what I'm going to make and I just start chopping an onion because I know it's going to go in everything that I eat. Onions are really healthy and they give great flavor. They are so good for you. They're one of those anti-cancer, immune system-boosting superfoods. So I'm happy to eat a lot of onions all the time. Okay, but why not theme and variation? So instead of onions, I sometimes use shallots. And I forget about shallots because I don't frequently see them in the organic food section. But shallots give a really, really unique, delicious flavor. They're in a lot of Asian recipes and French recipes. The French like to use shallots chopped up a little bit in their salad dressings. And the Asians use it quite frequently, like in Vietnamese food, for example, in stir fries. It has a different taste than onion. And it's enough of a difference to be wow. It's a little, how do I describe it? A little smoky? It's so good. So give shallots a try. It just can, you know, sometimes when I'm making Asian food and I think, why doesn't it taste right like when I go to the restaurant? And one of the reasons is I'm using onions and not shallots. Shallots are really important. Okay, so chop up a bunch of shallots with that fresh ginger and a little garlic. And that's a great base for any stir fry or for a nice brothy soup is great, flavored with ginger, lots of it, some fresh garlic, the shallots, and then lemon juice. I like to squeeze in a lot of lemon juice. And that combination, those four things, are really a great base for a stir fry or a soup. Very fresh, very good, and very good for you. And guess what? No salt. Because Karen doesn't like her salt. Oh, yeah. So, let's talk a little bit about flax seeds for a minute. Or more specifically, Lignans. It's a silly word. L-I-G-N-A-N-S. Lignans. Okay. Plant lignans are one of four classes of phytoestrogens. And they're important. They're really good for us. They help to fight breast cancer, other cancers. And we find a lot of them in flax seeds. That's one of the reasons why flax seeds are so important. You know, we talk about flax seeds to get our omega-3 fatty acids. And some people may reach for the flax oil because it's easy. Here's the thing. Flaxseed oil does not contain lignans. The lignans bind to the fiber. And when you have the flaxseed oil, you're not getting the fiber. So the best thing to do is to buy the flaxseed golden or brown. They're both fine. Grind them up, keep them in the freezer or the refrigerator, and put them on everything. Tablespoon a day. I know I forget sometimes, but as often as possible, they're really so super good and good for you. And it's not just for the omega-3 fatty acids, it's for the lignans. Let's hear it for the lignans, if you can say it. Lignans, we can find them in a variety of different foods. They're also in sesame seeds. Not as many as flax seeds, however. Flax seeds contain about 85 milligrams per ounce. Sesame seeds come in at about 11 milligrams per ounce. And kale has about 1.6 milligrams per cup, and broccoli has about 1.2 milligrams per cup. So certainly it's important to get our nutrition from a variety of different foods, but flax seeds really are a winner. Chia seeds are also really good for omega-3 fatty acids. However, the exact amount of lignans in chia seeds is currently not clear. I'm sure they're there, but I don't know how many. And I prefer flax seeds, personally. Okay, now unfortunately, people do get sick. And we can do our best to prevent disease. We can do our best to reduce the magnitude of different illnesses if we're going to get hit by them with diet and lifestyle. But we still can. Some people do get sick, and some people, either they're doing the best that they can to stay well, and many people aren't. And we have a lot of unhealthy people running around in this country and in other countries. I'm hearing stories all the time about people with a whole variety of different cancers, people dropping of heart disease, heart attacks in their 50s and 60s, too young, and a lot of people running around with diabetes and taking medication, in addition to a whole host of aches and pains. Okay, one of the things that drives me nutty is doctors recommending Ensure. You've heard of it. A lot of insurance companies cover it for certain medical conditions. And it's frequently used for people that are going through treatment for cancer. They're losing weight. They don't want to eat. They're going through chemotherapy, radiation, or some complicated surgery. And everybody says, have Ensure. It tastes good. It'll keep you healthy. It'll keep you well. And of course, read the ingredients. Ensure is loaded with what? Corn, maltodextrin, sugar, corn syrup, milk protein concentrate, soy protein isolate, canola oil, and then a whole bunch of different vitamins, added vitamins, like folic acid and vitamin A. The kind of vitamins that we talk about on this show, some of them should not be taken as a vitamin because it can be toxic, and some of these things should be taken from food. Okay, so the idea is when people are going through a health crisis and they're not eating and you don't want them to eat weight, they come up with this great product, sugar and vitamins, to help people keep going. And I think we should be doing more than that. Because, yeah, maybe it kind of helps people stay alive, maybe, or get through a treatment. But is it really helping them thrive? Is it feeding the illness? Or is it feeding the immune system? And is it really helping speed up the recovery and the healing? I would hate to see a study, but unfortunately, this is how we learn things, where we take a certain group of people and we do one thing with them, and we take a control group and we do nothing with them, and then we take maybe another group and do something else. And, you know, I could see some sort of a test where certain people going through some kind of treatment, some are given Ensure, some are given let them fend for themselves, and others are given something like this. Dr. Furman, one of my favorite doctors, has recommended for people that ask for an Ensure replacement to make a smoothie that's made with hemp seeds, pine nuts, and pumpkin seeds, blended with wild blueberries, pomegranate juice, lettuce, kale, collards, and cooked split peas, possibly a banana. Now, how does that sound to you compared with water, corn, maltodextrin, sugar, corn syrup, milk, protein, concentrate, cocoa powder, if you're getting the chocolate version, and a whole host of synthetic vitamins? Can people get one down and one not? I don't know. I do know that when I was going through my chemotherapy treatment for advanced ovarian cancer over 5 years ago, I never had Ensure. I never got really horribly nauseous. I never vomited. And I had some energy. I did get fatigued, sure, but I didn't have any of the horrible classic symptoms of somebody that's going through some very, very serious treatment. And I really attribute it to my careful following of making sure I got all kinds of food-based nutrients, and I drank a lot of these smoothies, not this particular recipe, with hemp seeds and blueberries, but a lot of green-based frozen berry, raw nuts and seeds concoctions. And I felt them; they were very easy to go down, and they were delicious. And I recommend it. So if you have the unfortunate opportunity to be going through a treatment, or you know someone that is, you might... You know, sometimes we think, what can I do for that person? And oftentimes we say, if there's anything I can do to help. And where that expression comes from, a really good place. We need to do specific things if we really want to help. And people that are going through treatment, sometimes they need transportation, they need to be driven places, they need someone to do their shopping for them, or someone who could make some healthy smoothies for them. So there's some tips if you are really helping somebody or want to do a good deed for someone. These are some of the things that you can do. The difficult thing when it comes to, it always comes down to money, and Ensure, the product Ensure, a lot of times is reimbursed by insurance companies. So not only is it recommended by your medical practitioner, but it's financially attractive. And sometimes when you're going through all kinds of medical treatment, things tend to add up. I know, believe me. I had over $100,000 in medical payments that my very good insurance plan with in and out of network coverage weren't paying. And I had to appeal over 20 different providers. And I ultimately got them all paid. But when you are going through medical treatment, what you're paying for can really add up. I know that I was buying all kinds of different food-based supplements, nutraceuticals, and it was really, really expensive, and insurance didn't pay for it. Insure. I don't like it. Don't like it at all. Let's see. Okay, so there was an article in The Lancet. And The Lancet's a very reputable medical journal published in England. A few years ago, they put out a piece about, based on, I think it was based on the UN's Food and Agricultural Organization report about how animal agriculture is about 18% responsible for non-human global warming gases. And they came out a little bit after that report and said to the Great Britain community that everybody needs to be reducing their animal product consumption with a goal of 30%, and I forgot when it was to reach that goal, maybe 2020 or maybe 2050, but they made this profound statement that the community, the UK community at large, needs to really buckle down and reduce their animal products by 30% because it would be good for health and it would be good for the environment. And they put out several articles all at once on this subject. I was kind of smiling when I read it because this was like groundbreaking news, and it was in 2009 or 2010. And I remember reading it and saying, okay, I'm really glad this information is coming out from such a reputable journal, but this really isn't news. We've been talking about this stuff for 10, 20, 30 years. But you know, we need to repeat things before people get it. I know people have told me even on this show that it's a good thing to repeat things because we may hear things, but it takes a while to get that message to all of our 53 to 100 trillion or so cells so that we want to move in the right direction. Okay, so The Lancet came out recently and they're talking about how last year, the UK government decided to gently nudge people to change their unhealthy behaviors. And it was a public health strategy. And guess what? They've now discovered that it's relatively ineffective. The nag approach doesn't work. Huh. And I think one of the things that's being encouraged, and I think this is a good idea, it's not the only thing, but one of the things that needs to be encouraged, and it needs to be encouraged from all avenues, and the government can participate in this, and that is our physicians need to be talking about how important it is for people to take charge of their own health. They should be talking to their patients about smoking, drinking, exercise, and eating habits. But I know what doctors think because I've had conversations with some of them, and it's like a double-edged sword. Number one, they don't have a lot of time because the insurance companies are tightening down, and in order for anyone to make a reasonable living and a profit, they have to see so many patients in the day. So there's not a lot of time to talk about all of these things. And The other thing is that doctors believe, many doctors believe, their patients don't want to change. And this is the nugget that I don't believe. Because I think if people hear from their doctors on a regular basis, you need to eat plant foods and lay off the meat, the dairy, and the junk, and be really strong about it. I knew a handful of doctors that wouldn't treat patients who were smokers. These doctors said, I can't help you if you're not going to help yourself. And I would like to see, I'd like to see this a little bit more in our doctors. Now, the other thing, of course, we need to see this all around. We need to have this information in schools. We need to have home economics or some sort of course in the schools where kids learn about food, nutrition, where our food comes from, and why it's so important to eat certain foods. And I know that schools are cutting costs here and there, but there are certain pieces in the curriculum that are really essential that should be considered essential. Math and science, sure, are important, but we need to know how to feed ourselves. And I think an art class here and there wouldn't hurt either, but that's not related to food. Yeah. So the nudging policy is not effective in getting people to change the way they think about food. The last thing I wanted to talk about, one of my favorite subjects, is milk. And there was an interesting article in the New York Times this weekend about someone, a journalist. Oh, I just dropped a page. Let's see if I can carefully pick this up and not make too much noise. A journalist went, who was into artisanal food scene, actually went out to visit a dairy farmer. It's a nice little story, well, kind of sad, but the point is that dairy farmers are having a really tough time these days, breaking even, making a profit. And they talk about this particular dairy farmer who's been in it for several generations. When this one farmer was a kid, his family had 15 cows. They milked them by hand. And then in the 70s, the farm had 90 cows, and they were milked automatically with vacuum technology. And now they own 135 cows, and they're having a really tough time. And a lot of the costs involved in producing milk has to do with the prices for corn and soybeans that they feed the cow. So ideally, when the cost of corn and soybeans are low and milk prices are high, they can make a comfortable living. But now that we're in a global market, the prices for milk are kind of determined globally. And a lot of milk farmers are struggling. And that's even with subsidies that are given to control prices and grow animal feeds. And they're having a really hard time. And so my heart goes out to them, because nobody should be struggling, especially when they're putting in a tremendous amount of work. They talked about how they got up at, where did it say this? They got up at 4:30 in the morning and they work until 7 p.m. Okay, they work hard. But there's something missing in this story. And that is, maybe they should get out of the business. Maybe they shouldn't be making milk and dairy products anymore. Maybe there's something else that they can do. They work from 4:30 in the morning till 7 p.m. Maybe they should be growing organic vegetables or growing soybeans and making soy milk. and making it organic and selling it on a local level. I know that when people are working very, very hard and are struggling, change is even harder because they're tired and there isn't a lot of time to make change. Now, what's interesting about this story is the daughter of this particular family ended up coming up with an idea of a kids' camp. And the kids spend a week caring for cows. They learn about agriculture and running around a huge open space. And the camp is almost as profitable as a year of milking cows. So the daughter's come up with an alternative. Now, she's going to Cornell and she's studying about the agricultural business, kind of thinking about continuing in the dairy business, but she's also got this other thing going on, and I would definitely go with the camp, maybe not to learn how to milk cows, but an opportunity for kids to learn about agriculture and run around in the fresh air is a good thing. So there are ways to get out of this, but the point is that we shouldn't be growing animals to make food to feed people. Growing cows to make milk. The list is seemingly endless of ailments and illnesses that highly correlate with dairy consumption. And when I talk to people about transitioning to a healthier diet, I don't like to scare people with the vegan word and say, you gotta go vegan. The first thing I tell them is stop consuming dairy products. I don't say stop consuming meat or fish. Stop consuming dairy products. It's one of the most unhealthiest foods. And the first thing that people will say, oh, I don't eat a lot of dairy. You don't realize how much of something you're eating until you decide not to eat it and you decide to be religious about it and read every label, because dairy is in so many different packaged foods and it's unhealthy. Dairy is highly correlated to cancer, correlated to multiple sclerosis, arthritis, bronchitis, asthma, autism, child diabetes, osteoporosis, of course. It's endless. And so my heart goes out to these people who are working really hard and struggling financially and trying to make the business profitable, but the dairy industry is not a business that needs to continue, in my opinion. In my opinion. Right. Okay, I just wanted to end with reminding you of my other show on the Progressive Radio Network. It's all about food. I spoke with Eric Waltman last Wednesday, who's with Food and Water Watch, and we talked at length about fracking, and it was really frightening. Fracking is frightening. And fortunately, the state of Buffalo here in New York has put out a ban and is encouraging our Governor Cuomo to do a statewide ban of fracking. Now, currently, Cuomo seems to be pro-fracking, but we can all do our best. And if you live in New York and you can give Cuomo a call and say that you support a statewide ban on fracking, Food and Water Watch has a number to call, 866-961-3208, 866-961-3208. And if you have a time, give the office a call and say that you support a ban on fracking, a statewide ban. And if you need to know more about fracking, please listen to my show from Wednesday with Eric Waltman. We learned a lot about this very frightening technique, which uses a lot of toxic chemicals to go into the shale underground and draw out gas that can be used for fuel and other things. Well, let's see. I think that's about it for today. So, this went pretty well. I want to thank you for joining me, and please remember to write me at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. Send me some questions, things you want to hear on the show, or just let me know how you are. Love to hear any kind of news about my favorite subject, food. I'm going to sign off with the real jingle. Thanks for listening, and have a delicious week.
R-E-R-E-A-L.
Responsible eating and living.
R-E-A-L.
Reels, good for the planet, the inhabitants who need sound advice on the right thing to do.
When it comes to good health,
we need facts that are true to choose what to eat and save the planet too. That's responsible eating and living.
You'll find the real tools for you.
Real
tools for you.
Real.